pray. But as children, did any of you ever experience bullying? It seemed like, you know, I remember riding my bike to the grocery store with my best friend when I was about 14, and some bully from across town wanted to try to mess with us. I remember getting it in fifth grade. It was in the boys' restroom. It was the only place the female teacher couldn't go, was the boys' restroom. And so it was the only place in that religious school that I attended where there could be any mischief. And so there was plenty of mischief in the boys' restroom. Junior high is a period of life that I would not repeat for any number of millions of dollars. That whole, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, I would like to have just taken a long nap or something, and avoided that. It was really awful. And there's some really awful things that Israel experienced in their history. In fact, we're told about them in this week's Torah portion, continuing on in Genesis 15 from what you heard read in the Torah reading. God tells Abraham that his descendants are going to be persecuted. We could say it like this. There's bullies in the world, and you are going to be bullied. It's just part of the calling that God has for us. In fact, Psalm 2 says, God, why do the nations rage against us? Why do they enrage against us, your anointed ones? And we've seen in the past, for instance, in our study of the book of Mark, that as soon as the disciples recognize and admit that Yeshua is Messiah, the very next thing out of Yeshua's mouth is, then you will be persecuted. He says, you must count the cost. To lose your life is to gain it, and to gain your life is to lose it. In other words, he's saying it, you're going to lose either way. And so to embrace Messiah, to embrace Yeshua, to be God's people, comes with a certain level of bullying. I remember in sixth grade, at that point, I was in, I had changed schools, and I remember someone coming to me. It was awful. I don't need to set myself up for pity, but the teacher always had us sit at table. We didn't have desks per the traditional desks. We were at tables, which sat two students, and each week there would be a new seating chart, and you would be sitting next to someone different. I don't know quite the logic of that. I didn't understand it when I was 11 years old. But it seemed like I always got set next to the same kid. I swear it was at least every third week I was next to the same out of 20-something kids in the class. Why did I have to be next to him at least once a month? It was something sinister. I know it. I remember one day he looked at my shoes and he said, George, you have the cruddiest, goofiest shoes. That actually was one brief period when my parents, my dad had a tremendous job working as the administrator of a different school, and we had some money. My mom can make a dollar go farther than anyone else in the world, and so even though they had some cash flow at the time, I didn't get name brand tennis shoes. I got the discount tennis shoes from Payless Shoes or wherever we bought them. And so the kid looked at my tennis shoes and said, "George, your tennis shoes, you know, whatever. They're awful. They're junky. They're, you know." And so I really took that to heart. I finally had the opportunity, though, before that school year was over. I needed a new pair of tennis shoes, and we went back to the discount shoe place, and guess what they had at the shoe place? They had Reeboks. They didn't have they had Nike. They had Reebok. Now you have me saying it. I'm still saying it. They had Reebok tennis shoes. It was like, "Oh, Mom, can I please have those?" And I don't know how or why, but she said yes. They must have been on sale. And so I joyously, I thought, "Oh, thank you, God. I'm over this bullying thing. I won't have to deal with this anymore." At least, you know, about my shoes. There was everything else. I couldn't hit a ball. I couldn't, you know, whatever. But you know what Corey said? I still remember his name. You know what he said? The first day I wore those shoes, he saw them. Obviously, he looked for ways to pick on me, because he saw the shoes that first day. He said, "Oh, you got Reeboks. Well, I still don't like you." But I learned a lesson that day, and as an 11 or 12 year old, I. With God's help, I had the wisdom to learn a lesson. There's nothing that I can do. I can try to get the right shoes. You know, later in junior high, I remember it was one time, a shirt, you know, "You have a chunky shirt on." I learned that there was nothing you can do that is going to take away that feeling of intimidation. You can't try to buy your way around the bullies. The bullies are there. And it is only going to be the help of the Most High that overcomes the bullies. It's as if they still say, "Wow, we still don't like you." And it really cuts through, and I recognize the heart of the issue. The heart of the issue was not me. The heart of the issue was them. And I, at least that time, I recognized that, and it brought me a little solace and a little comfort. This is the story of the Haftor portion for this week. You've just heard it in modern terms. As I announced last week, I actually started it 3 weeks ago, I am engaged in the series of the study of the Haftarot, which are the readings from the prophets that accompany the Torah readings. This week, for instance, the Torah reading was Genesis chapter 12 through chapter 17. And the readings from the prophets are drawn from perhaps Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Kings, Samuel. Have you thought of Kings and Samuel being prophets? The tradition goes way back in Jewish history, perhaps to at least the 2nd century CE, that this tradition has existed. It might have been in place as early as the Second Temple period when Yeshua was living. We do have a story in Luke chapter 4, I believe, where Yeshua is in the synagogue and he stands up, he takes the scroll of Isaiah and he reads a passage of scripture. And his drash is very short. When the comments that he makes about the portion he reads, he simply says, what you've heard just read is found in myself. What an audacious drash that was. Perhaps that was the custom of reading the Haftorah portion. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that there was actually a Haftorah cycle at that time, merely just the tradition of perhaps doing a reading from the prophets. So the tradition is very old, and the list of books connected, the list of passages connected, goes back quite a ways. To perhaps the second, as early as the second or third century. Most of the Haftorah portions are connected somehow with the readings from the Torah, and this one is the same way. It mentions Abraham and has a number of thematic and verbal connections to the Torah portion. It begins in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 27, and continues through chapter 41, verse 16. In essence, I want to begin at the beginning of chapter 41 for time's sake. God begins, Isaiah 41, "Keep silent before me, O islands. And let the peoples renew their strength. Let them draw near, then let them speak." God is speaking to the nations. I'll give you a heads up. He's talking to the bullies. God says, keep silent. And then, interestingly, in the same verse, it says, let them draw near and let them speak. What is God saying? Are they to speak, keep silent, or are they to speak? What is God calling and or asking them to do? I think it's interesting that I see here that God is giving them an opening. What is in their heart? How will they respond to Israel? How will they act to God's people? Will they attack? Will they accuse? Will they slander? Or will they remain silent? It's interesting that God sarcastically repeats the phrase in verse 1, renew their strength. It's the same phrase from the exact preceding verse, which says, but those who hope for the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will run and not be weary. They will walk and not faint. So those that hope in the Lord have their strength renewed. To trust God is to find new strength. And then in the very next verse, when God speaks to the nations, he sarcastically throws this phrase at them, let the peoples renew their strength. What's God getting at by repeating that same verse? Earlier in the last verse spoken to Israel, now speaking to the nations. But we have their answer. Before the first verse of Isaiah 41 is over, we have their response. They say, let us come near to judgment. Let us come forward for argument. They're not going to remain silent. They are going to slander and attack. in verse 5, we have a description of what's going on inside their heads. We have a description of the bullies. Have you ever wondered what's going on? What are they thinking when they attack the Most High? What are they thinking when they attack us? What are those that hate the God of Israel think when they attack Jewish people? Or kill Christians, as has been happening just in the last couple of weeks again in Nigeria. What are they thinking? Verse 5, the islands saw and were afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They draw near and come. What is going on inside the bully's head? It's fear. It's fear. Do you remember last year when we did a study through the book of Joshua and the two scouts show up at Jericho and this prostitute hides them? They have this conversation and she tells them, the whole city of Jericho has heard about what the God of Israel has been doing for you guys for the past 40 years since you guys came out of Egypt. We knew that you were coming this way. And we're dreadfully afraid. What does the message of God produce in those that do not know Him? The message of God in those that do not know the Most High is what is produced is fear. Rahab tells the scouts, the city of Jericho is in dreadful fear because of Israel. Fear is one of the things that God had to overcome in the lives of the disciples as He was teaching them about Himself. They are out on the boat with Him. It's nighttime. Yeshua's asleep. In fact, it's interesting. That's the only time in the whole story of the Besara, the good news, where it says that Messiah is asleep. And what a time. Because there's a violent storm that sweeps up, and there he is, sawing logs. And they wake him up and they say, don't you care that we're going to drown? We're afraid. It's interesting. They're even accusing Messiah himself of not caring for them. They're so afraid. They can't see beyond their fear. And for the next several stories, Messiah has to work with them. Oh, by the way, he calmed the storm. And so they all lived. They all made it. The next several stories is how Messiah builds their trust, overcoming their fear. You see, someone who trusts in God cannot fear at the same time. Did you pick that up in this week's Torah portion? Look at Genesis chapter 15. This is, in fact, the very passage that Rod read for us. Genesis chapter 15 in this week's Parsha says, after this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear. I am your shield. I am your very great reward. And then Abraham makes a number of excuses and rationales and defenses. Oh, I'm still childless. It's been so many years. What about your promise? How about this guy? Can he be my heir? Then the Lord came to him, and he repeated the promise of the stars of the sky and the sands on the seashore. This is going to be what your offspring will be like. And in verse 6, the last verse Rod read was, Abraham trusted the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. Because Abraham came to a place of trusting the Lord, he was able to overcome his fear. God knew there was fear in Abraham's heart. Before Abraham could even come to the point of trusting the word of the Most High, he had to overcome the fear. So at Jericho, or in a night vision to Abraham, this issue of fear comes up over and over again. But as we see, both in the story in Jericho, or here in Isaiah 41, it is that the bullies are more afraid than you are. It says in verse 6 of our Haftorah portion, speaking of the bullies, they help, each one helps his neighbor, and everyone says to his brother, be strong. Be strong. They go around encouraging each other. Take heart. Have courage, my friend. Be strong. Be strong. You know, normally in today's culture, we see synergy as something good. When people work together, teamwork is applauded. And unity is important. Working together, bringing your various gifts and abilities that the Most High has given you is a good thing. And I'd say yes, of course. But you see how the bullies do it too. They prop each other up. Oh, come on, man. We can do this. They help each one his neighbor and every one his brother, saying, take heart, be strong. Be strong in building our idols. Be strong in opposing Israel. And so verse 7 says, so the artisan encourages the goldsmith, and the one who strikes with the hammer encourages the one who swings the anvil, the blacksmith, saying of the construction that they are making, it is good. It is good. Where have we heard that phrase before? That's the phrase from Genesis chapter 1, where God has created the universe. God has created the universe, and the Creator looks at His creation and says, it is good. But here, it's like, the roles are completely reversed, though. Here it is the worshiper creating their idol and saying it is good. Here the worshiper is creating their God, creating the Creator, their lifeless idol that Isaiah will talk about more in just a few verses after this, saying it is good. And then, with a note of irony, the last phrase of verse 7 says, and they fasten it with nails that it will not be moved. They think that their idols are good. They think that they've riveted and glued them together very well, except just to make sure they pound in a few nails. They're not even sure about the quality of their idols. They are striving to overcome the fear, the turmoil inside their spirits. Verse 8 shifts to God's message for His people Israel. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I've chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Notice the way God comes to Israel when there are bullies that are preparing their idols, or bullies that are preparing their siege works. God comes to Israel and says, you are my friend. You are my servant, the one I have chosen for myself. By the way, the word there for friend literally means my loved one, the one I love. And I think it's more than just an emotional encouragement. It's more than just I have a buddy, but it's the promise of God that I am going to be with you. And in fact, he continues by saying, I'm going to hold you with my right hand, my victorious, righteous right hand. I'm actually holding you. You don't realize it. You don't recognize it. But you're not standing anywhere except in the hand of the Most High. A little later, the image shifts and God says, I'm holding your hand. It's an interesting twist. We're standing in God's hand while he holds our other hand. It's amazing to these poetic images in the prophets. The prophets have so much wonder and beauty in them. God continues in verse 9 saying, you whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called from the uttermost part of it and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you away. Verse 10. It's the same exact words that God said to Abraham in this week's Torah portion in chapter 15 of Genesis. Al tirah. Al tirah. Fear not. Don't be afraid. Al tirah. For I am with you. Do not be dismayed. For I am your God. I will strengthen you. You know, that image of the bullies back in verse 6, where they run around and they're trying to prop each other up and trying to sustain each other, telling each other, be strong, be strong. But who is Israel's strength? Israel relies on the strength of the Most High. God says in verse 10, I strengthened you. I have always helped you. Yes, I have held you with my victorious right hand. He goes on to say that those that contend with them, those that are angry with them, those that struggle with them, in verse 12 it even says those that do battle, those that go to war against you, all of these people will be it says, sorry, too many pages. You will seek them, you will look for them, and you will not find them. Even those that battle against you shall be nothing. The bullies are nothing. Those circumstances that come along that try to produce fear in your life, God is holding us. God is with us for the victory. Verse 13 says, for I am the Lord your God. I hold your right hand. There's that other image. I'm holding your hand as you're standing on mine. I say to you, Al tirah, fear not. I have helped you. Some translations translate that, I will help you. The Hebrew actually reads, I have helped you. It's not even a promise. God's not even saying, I will help you in the future. God is saying, I already have helped you. I have always been helping you, and I, therefore, will continue to help you. Al tira, fear not. Al tira, don't be afraid. It actually repeats it. It says it in verse 13, al tira, and then it says it again in verse 14. Al tira, fear not, you worm Jacob. I have helped you, says the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Though Israel feels like a worm, and there's a word there in verse 13 that can or verse 14 that could literally be taken as not only a worm but an insect. You may feel like, in the eyes of the bully, you may feel like a little bug. You may feel like a worm, but God says, okay, Jacob the worm, don't be afraid. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I have always helped you because I have chosen you. I will not reject you. Remember verse 5 of chapter 41. It is the bullies that are afraid. If it's the bullies that are afraid, why must we fear? They're the ones that are afraid. Let's walk in the strength that God offers us. He is the God who spoke to Moses to bring Israel out of Egypt. He is the one that divided the Red Sea. He is the one that spoke at Mount Sinai, giving his righteous instructions. He is the one that led his people through the wilderness and fought their battles for them. He is the one that used Joshua to go into the land to bring a birthright, an inheritance that God had promised to give. God kept his promise. There is nothing that we need to fear. Al tira. Don't be afraid.